Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. How many cyber attacks has your business encountered so far this year? It's likely you're faced up to a number, and these can have big implications for your organization and for its brand. Here to talk about how to use communications to approach a cybersecurity crisis are FTI Consulting's Giles Barry and Kate Brader. Giles, Kate, welcome to our podcast.
Dave, thanks for having me again.
Great to have you here. Let's dive in. Giles, first of all, tell us a bit about FTI Consulting.
Well, Dave, it's great to be back. And FTI is a global communications agency with 300 people in London and getting on for 1,000 all around the world. We specialize in what we call moments of truth. That's where companies may have a big launch, a corporate takeover, or a big problem. And I think cyber in the last few years has become the kind of big problem that we've specialized in. It's come almost out of the blue. My background is as a journalist years ago. We would never have written about anything like this. Kate, though, my colleague, is far more integrated into this world and can tell you really why she is so ingrained in it.
And that sounds great. And I will come on to Kate's very specifically in a moment, but I just want to try and pick at your big problem a bit, first of all, because as you said, your job is to deal with lots of big problems. So where does a cybersecurity crisis rank in the litany of crises that comms professionals have to deal with?
Well, They're all different. They're all nasty. Tragedies are, of course, a disaster. The accident, the deaths, it's hideous to deal with, horrible, emotionally draining. Scandals are a disaster. It's juicy and has tremendous traction on digital and social media. Again, very, very painful for certain people. Corruption, awful, nasty, sleazy, damaging. And then the completely out there and inexplicable, the thing that's come from complete left field, they're very, very nasty as well. But cyber, I think, is really bad because it's so unquantifiable. It's new. It's uncontrollable. And to use an old term, you can't get your arms around it. There's very little recourse. We'll go on to talk about the counterparties on the other side. But to me, the difference with cyber is that you can't go to the police about it. Not really. The people you're dealing with are actually happy to be doing what they're doing. And there's very little way to actually get any sort of redress. So it's a whole new, nasty, mysterious. And I think particularly nasty is the fact it seems it's open-ended and also very, very financially damaging. So it's an evolving and rather grim scenario that people in communications and marketing have to get their heads around. I don't think any big business in the UK that can afford not to be prepared to deal with a cyber attack.
Okay. And that, I get those factors, I guess, are the things that make a cybersecurity incident a crisis.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people think they've got a cyber crisis when they haven't. Okay, maybe there might have been a minor incident where your computers have gone down or some material has leaked in a small way. There's all the chief technology officer isn't up to the job. There's an incident, but a crisis is what we're talking about, which has afflicted some of the biggest companies around the world. in the last few years is when it goes on and escalates very, very quickly and can become very menacing and very expensive.
Okay, great. That's good in terms of getting our definitions right. So thanks, Giles. And Kate, welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast. It's good to have you here. In the event of a cybersecurity crisis, how should an organization immediately respond?
I think actually, if you don't mind, I might build on some of those points that Giles made around what makes it a crisis. And then a lot of those things are the things that drive those immediate communications actions.
Sounds like a plan.
The biggest one, the way that we all judge a crisis is by the impact. What has it affected? It's not the thing, it's not the person that are doing whatever it is they're doing to you, but it's the effect that it's having on your business. And because of that, then it's really about the requirement to disclose it. So, does it have materiality? And that could be financial market materiality, i.e., you're listed and you've got to let people know about it as a result. You've got to let your shareholders know. Or does it have materiality to individuals? Because, of course, we have a whole world of legislation now, the General Data Protection Regulation in particular in Europe, that looks after the rights of individuals and their data. So is it material to those people? And those two things really are what will drive a lot of those initial actions. First bit of advice though is proceed with caution. It's very easy to feel quite emotional about these things because it is quite often, as Giles mentioned, a criminal act by a group of people that we can't see, that we can't do anything about. It's the right instinct to want to go out and confirm that something has happened. But again, it's very difficult in the early stages of a cyber incident to understand exactly what has happened. So proceed with caution. Make sure that you do properly understand from both your technical colleagues what it is that has happened, and you understand from your legal advisors, whether that's internal counsel or external legal advisors, exactly what has happened and what we need to do as a result in terms of our communications. And again, coming back to that point about what makes it a crisis, a lot of that will depend on materiality. So if you're a listed business, there used to be a moment where companies really hesitated about whether or not they needed to disclose things and start communicating to the stock market in particular. It's become much more normal. The mystique around that, it's much more normal to disclose and to let people know that this is something that you're going through now. There are new regulations over in the US from the SEC in particular around disclosure that again are forcing companies to be a bit more open and a bit more upfront that these things are happening. So you've got some tensions in the system there as communicators already, but of course that's our job, that we've got to pick our way through on that. The third reason why you do need to be a bit cautious though is that the threat actor, and that's the term that we use a lot for, the counterparties, the people that are committing this sort of, potentially criminal act against us, the threat actor could still be in your systems. So
Right.
if you quickly start writing emails, writing press releases, putting statements on websites, these are things that if they're a sophisticated group, they'll be monitoring for. And there'll all be indicators to them about whether or not they've been discovered, whether or not they should start to move for the next phase of their cyber incident, because they might not have unleashed the ransomware, for example, within your system at that moment. But as soon as they realize they're discovered, it might trigger them to move on to the next phase, which could be the ransomware, it could be the data exfiltration, those kind of things. So again, proceed with caution because there are many other balancing factors around the communication. But most immediately, you do need to start thinking about what your communications plan is. So don't necessarily start enacting it, but do start thinking, who do I need to tell? How am I going to tell them? Because it could be, Giles mentioned, your computers could be out, your channels to communicate could be down as a result of this. How am I going to get a message out? How am I going to get it out to all of the different groups of stakeholders that I need to do? And what does that message need to be?
Okay, so when you're building that plan that you talk about there, Kate, I guess you need to understand what are the key communications moments and also the challenges that you're likely to encounter during the course of the cyber incident. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, there are three sort of moments, and of course there are three because we're good comms professionals around the table here. Three moments: confirmation, interruption, and notification that you need to be prepared for. Confirmation is that first bit that we spoke about, the going public part of it. And again, the mystique is starting to lift about that. There are going to be different factors that control that. But if, for example, you're a company that manufactures something, you've had to shut down your manufacturing, you can't get product out to people, it's a business interruption that you've got to notify people about pretty quickly. If you sell holidays online, for example, and people can't click through and they can't complete their sales, that's a pretty immediate business interruption, and you need to very quickly notify people. So there are things that will make that notification and that decision to make that notification that we're having an issue, we're dealing with it, and it's a pretty standard way now, of course, that we notify people about these kind of things. We used to talk about, I worked for a long, long time for a company where we talked about the three C's. So, the care that this has happened, the control of what you're doing about it, and the concern that you're going to take to make sure it doesn't happen again. So the confirmation is the first point. This has happened. How are we going to let people know? What then? Secondly, is the interruption. What are they not able to do as a result of this happening, or what are we not able to do? And that could be something very technical around within your systems. You can't use a particular application, so there needs to be a workaround, there needs to be something else. It could be that products might not be on shelves looking the same as they do at the moment for the next 3 weeks. It might be telling people, actually, products will be on shelves for the next 3 weeks, and don't panic buy, don't switch brand, don't worry about it. We've got inventory, this is totally under control. So that's your interruption part of it. The third part is notification, and this is where we get into the other part. Cyber events have two halves to them. One is the interruption. Our systems are down and we can't do the thing we normally do. The second part is data. And that's the stuff that GDPR, for example, really controls. So it's all about what data has been stolen as a result. And increasingly, although it might be there are elements of corporate espionage where people might be looking for trade secrets, all of those kind of things. Increasingly, and most often what I will deal with is the data that's stolen pertains to individuals and individuals' personally identifiable information, or PII. That's what GDPR protects. That's what we all have a right to ensure that companies that we hand that data over to are looking after. That includes things like your address, details of your passport. But of course, most concerningly from a fraud perspective, it's things like bank account details. So notification is all about letting people know if, for example, your payroll data has been hacked, and all of a sudden they know all the names of your employees, where they live, and importantly, the bank account that they get paid into every single month, that you let those employees know what they need to do immediately in order to protect themselves from fraud. And that fraud is exactly all of those kind of annoying things that we see, those text messages that you get that come through and go, "Oh, hi, this is your bank. Can you just give us a call and tell us all of your bank details? Because we want to look after you." That, of course, are becoming more sophisticated and really, really hard to discern. So they're the three things and the three key moments to be ready for, all slightly different in flavour.
So we talk. You mentioned a little bit earlier that something around the instigators behind these sorts of attacks. Perhaps you can tell us more about those. What counterparties lie behind the more common cybersecurity incidents, and generally, what is their motivation?
So you have a mixture of both corporate entities that run and look just like we would recognize a corporate entity, that might have a paid spokesperson, that will have shareholders, that will run themselves in an incredibly organized way. And of course, you have state-sponsored threat actors as well. You also have states that will use those corporate entities as well. So the picture isn't cut and dry, it isn't clean or clear. Those entities, as professional and organized as they are, frequently break up, evolve, rebrand, rename themselves. So the truth is, do we ever really 100% know who is behind some of this activity? Not really. And some of the names that you might be familiar with would be Clop or Scattered Spider. They're always sort of changing and evolving and coming up with weird and wonderful names. So, the real kind of truth, and going right back to Giles's point, is that these are a sort of an invisible actor in so many ways. And what we don't ever really have success with as communicators is being able to point to them and sort of make them the villain of the piece. And it really does come back to the emphasis and the role that we have in communications is taking on the business, ensuring the business is taking on the onus and the responsibility for resolving it. That's all we can focus on. So although we didn't ask for this, we didn't invite these people in, you know, we have to just deal with the cleanup and our responsibilities subsequently. What I can probably talk a little bit more about, though, is the evolving tactics that we see. This isn't just about a bunch of people who sit behind keyboards and tap away and log into databases and interact only with systems that your IT people will know. No. More and more, there is an element in every single case that I deal with of what we call social engineering. And that means interaction with a human being. We've worked on a case that is as simple as somebody dialing up the IT help desk and saying, I need you to change the password on my account. And the IT help desk doing that over the phone, of course, it wasn't their account, it was somebody else's.
Right.
And through that, they've gained admission to the entire system. I think there was a hack last year on a couple of years ago on a well-known social media site that was very similar in that the IT team were asked to change the passwords, but it was more through through using manipulation, I believe, you know, all sorts of things can be used around either information that hasn't been disclosed to the employer that the threat actor is threatening to disclose, or other kind of, you know, bribery, essentially, that they might use to manipulate. Some other not very pleasant tactics that we've seen are the threat actor getting in touch with individuals and asking for the ransom demand, but maybe a relative of somebody who runs the business. Maybe disclosing information about their children as well. So we've seen some really unpleasant things. The most unpleasant and the most scary recently was a ransom demand delivered in a bouquet of flowers. So yeah, it's
wow.
Yeah, really unpleasant stuff. So I think, you know, we can't just we can't become completely unemotional about this. And again, communications is so important in all of that, that we recognize that there are going to be people that are going to be, one, on an individual basis, upset that their own privacy has been exposed, and two, maybe even directly engaged by this criminal party as part of the process. And that's pretty yucky to deal with.
Oh, it is. A question really for both of you, I guess. How can a comms professional help a business to recover from a cyber crisis?
All comes down to trust. And, you know, Giles, I don't know what points you've, you know, that rebuild of trust is much more where I would hand something back to you a little bit more. But there are two big areas that you're going to need to rebuild trust. One is if anybody or any other organizations that you've worked with or your customers have chosen to disconnect from you. There's a big, long process to go through to rebuild trust, to say, hey, we're safe. You've got to come back and interact with us again, particularly whether it's people with interacting IT systems and they've pulled the plug on you. The process to get that verification back in order can be very technical, but also can involve a huge amount of communications and rebuilding trust. The second long tail of these kind of incidents is around litigation, potentially, whether that's brought by private individuals, whether that's brought through class actions, or whether that's businesses on business bringing litigation. And again, that is all about a breakdown in trust, essentially, that they don't feel quite often that you were taking enough care in the first place, that you didn't take the appropriate actions during it, or that you simply didn't keep them up to date enough about what was happening. So they tend to be the two triggers for the loss of trust that we see. I mean, Giles, in terms of rebuilding trust and communicating to do that?
From my perspective, I think in the broader corporate communications world, I think there's no shame in having been attacked in a cyber incident. You know, we are talking about dealing with criminals as your counterparty. You know, you, in the most cases, people haven't done anything wrong. They are victims. And I think if they talk about it in the spirit of sharing their experience so other people could learn from it, and then moving on and you know, demonstrating all the old principles of talking about the good news to counteract bad news. I think covering things up, pretending it didn't happen, hoping it will go away, keeping it secret, you know, if it's been a major incident, forget it. You know, I think owning it and sharing it and moving on, because as I say, you are a victim here. You know, the counterparties are, as Kate says, often it's a rogue state where, you know, you might get in touch with the police or the authorities in that state, but they'll just probably laugh at you and think it's fantastic because they're enemies of the West. So you know, people are on your side, I think, if you become a victim of this. You know, as Kate says, some of the tactics are pretty grim. You're not gonna lack sympathy, and I think helping other people learn from your experience is a good thing to think about.
Completely. Something we very often do is work with our clients on how they're going to share those details. You know, the first thing that another business might ask for is what they call the indicators of compromise. So again, that's a term to get used to that you'll get asked for, which is, what was the pathway? How did they get in? How did you know they're in the system? So we can go and check that exact same piece of software or that back door or whatever it is that we had. But the old words of my boss, a wonderful man called Mike Register, were about, said it was all about doing the right thing and being seen to do the right thing.
Great advice. Giles, Kate, how should we find out more?
Dave, it's fantastic to speak to you again on this. We'll give you an email address and a website address that you can put into the show notes, so you can find out a bit more about all the detailed work we, and particularly Kate, does.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us today. Kate Brader, Giles Barry from FTI Consulting. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Giles Barry and Kate Brader. And thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gratian. Thanks too to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can. And email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk.